Hello, everybody. It is Lee Miltier, your coach, and we have a very exciting program for you today, and it's someone I have interviewed before. It is James Carl Butler, and you may be very familiar with him because I recently interviewed him on his phenomenal book, The System. And if you didn't get that book, you should have, but we have we're going to do something different we've never done before. We're actually going to interview one author on two books that they have written that have just come out, and we're really having Jim back because he was so popular from the System book that people wrote me and said, you know, we like this guy, what else does he have? And the two brand new books he has, one is called Focus, The Key Skill to Igniting Your Productivity So You Can Get More Done Every Day, and the other book is called Leverage, How to Accelerate the Speed and Velocity of Your Results. Now, both of these books are small books, so they're what I call a one setting read, but they are so phenomenal and they're so up our alley as entrepreneurs and business owners. But if you're brand new to us, let me give you some information about Jim. Jim and I have known each other and worked together for a while. He has been in one of my coaching programs. He has now spoken for some of my coaching programs, and he is truly a serial entrepreneur. He has built 4 companies from startup phase to over $1 million in revenue, so this guy knows what he's doing. He is the author now of 7 books and numerous ebooks. When I first met him, he was in the retail bridal store business, which he took from zero to over $1 million in sales in just 3 years, which you have to admit, in that kind of competition, that's amazing. He also grew another retail business from zero to over $1 million in over 18 months. Now, one of the things I like about Jim is he is down to earth, he is extremely on point, he's very respected, and the whole the world of retailers and businesses across the country, he helps them, you know, grow their sales and literally shatter their previous sales records. He has obviously known as a celebrated systems and marketing authority. He speaks and trains business owners how to create rapid and sustained growth in their business. He is the host of something really good. He's actually interviewed me on this. It's called Sound Laws of Success Podcast. And what he does is inspire entrepreneurs to take action in their businesses through applying these laws. So he offers wonderful things to entrepreneurs around the world. So, Jim, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Lee. It's an honor to be here.
It's always great to work with you. I know that you just worked with another coaching program that I work with and did a Skype program, and everybody was just taking notes like crazy. So I hope everybody today who's listening to this, if you're not driving, get a pencil and paper out because there's going to be a lot of ahas. So the first book I want to talk about, Jim, is your Focus book, because if there was ever a need in the world for entrepreneurs to do something, it would be called Focus. Stop chasing all of the shiny objects. So in your book, you talk about how focus is a skill that can become a habit with practice and control. So I think a big question everybody would have was, how do you develop that skill in a world of mass distraction?
Well, I think that's a great question, and this is a world of mass distraction. And no matter what you do, whatever you choose to, you're going to be distracted at some point in the day, unless you engineer your environment so you don't have that happen. And so I guess the thing that I just want to say off the outset is I really wrote this book because it's just a short little 50-page book. It's pretty quick to read, but it's kind of the best strategies I've found that help me stay on point. And you've got to consciously choose to, number one, develop this skill, and number two, to remove yourself from distraction. That's a conscious choice. And I think that if you look at focus as a skill, you may say, hey, I didn't do a very good job with this today, you know, and I think all of us have those kind of days. But if you can choose to remove yourself from distraction and choose to want to focus to get the result you're looking for, you're going to be so much more successful than if you just kind of try to wing it and figure things out as you go along. So one of the things that I really stress with people is that focus requires three elements. It requires intensity, discipline, and commitment. And it's a skill. And so it's just like any skill, you can work at making each of those little areas better in your life. But you've got to control yourself. You've got to control your environment. That's a lot easier said than done, especially controlling yourself. Because as entrepreneurs, a lot of times it's us that the business when we first start off. And it's easier to think, okay, I got to go do this or that. And you can lose your focus and not get things done that are going to help you get paid or, you know, focus on specifically revenue-producing activities instead of things that really don't pay you. And that's really critical at the very beginning of your business. And so if you break down focus into one of those three elements, most people who struggle with focus or struggle with getting things done, it's one of those three areas, one of those three components that they're struggling with. They may be committed, say, I want to make this business successful, but they don't sustain that commitment for very long. Or they may have discipline or commitment, but they can't sustain the intensity of the focus for a long period of time. And a lot of entrepreneurs have this, like you said, shiny object syndrome, where we're distracted easily. That's partly why we go into business for ourselves, because we see something, we see an opportunity, and so it's both a blessing and a curse. But if you can kind of shift that and say, okay, I'm really going to focus on this and combine these three elements in sequence in 90-minute blocks of time, which we'll talk about a little bit later, why that's so important you do that, you're going to be able to get a lot more done and focus on your results and your business and your life much better. So that would just be my encouragement to you, is that even if you feel like you're not very good at focusing on something, you can change that. It's a skill. It's just like anything. It's like a muscle. If you exercise it continuously, you're going to get better at it. And if you take the strategies I talk about in the book, and we'll talk about a lot in this call here, you're going to be much more successful at implementing and being more productive in your life. And that's why I subtitled the book, you know, The Key Skill to Igniting Your Productivity, so you can get more done every day, because it is a skill. And once you ignite focus in your life, it's amazing how much more you can get done.
Absolutely. I love everything and agree with everything that you've just said. Just before our call today, I get this call from a media person in my hometown, and as we all know, it's almost impossible to get media in your own hometown. And they of course, they want an interview the second that, you know, that I'm on the phone, and I'm saying, well, look, you know, I can't do that. I have a scheduled call, and, you know, that's not an option. And so I'm trying to negotiate with them. And, of course, a lot of us as entrepreneurs forget that we have the right to say no. We're always right. afraid if we don't say no, we're afraid if we do say no, we're going to lose the opportunity. So basically what I said to this media person was, by the way, on top of the fact I'm shocked they call me, is that the first time I could get to them would be later on this afternoon, and I gave them two times. And, you know, there was no problem. They took one of those times. And, again, it's a matter of just because somebody else's needs seem to be urgent to them, we have to remind ourselves of, you know, we're the king and we're the queen of our own reality and, you know, what's important to us. In your book, Jim, you talk about an interesting perspective about the concept of focus, and it was in the book.
Greg McKeon's book, Essentialism. Yeah, he talks about that. How?
Yes, thank you. I lost that track. I had written my notes down. And you talked about how to focus is both a noun and a verb. Now, it isn't just something you have, it is something you do. So talk about that distinction and help us understand how we can be more productive as a result of that.
Well, I really like Greg McKeon's book, Essentialism, is a great book, but that one idea in his book really stood out to me when I read that the first time, that focus is both a noun and a verb. And I think it's so easy to think it's one thing, and it's not. You know, people think of focus as a single goal, like, you know, Roger Bannister, I'm going to hit the 4-minute mile like he did to accomplish that, or Bill Gates setting a goal, I'm going to put Microsoft DOS on the majority of the world's computers, or Apple saying we're going to create the iPhone or the iWatch or the iPad or whatever. And so it is that. It's definitely having a singular focus, but it's also, trying to explain this concept, I guess, is there's a single objective you're trying to hit. And as you go along, a lot of people think, well, okay, I don't want to get distracted from my focus of what I'm trying to do. And so they don't let anything else into their life. And that's where the problem kind of comes in. If you have your blinders on exclusively to the point of you don't think about anything else, then you kind of have the problem that Kodak had, where Kodak said, we developed film, we are going to make film for the rest of our lives, and, you know, the market shifted. Now there's digital cameras, and now digital cameras are shifting, and because everybody has cameras on their phone now. And so if you're like Kodak and you have our focus is film, that's all we do, what happens is you wake up one day and the market has shifted and changed and you no longer have a business. And so that's why focus is both a noun and a verb. It's a singular objective of what you're trying to achieve when you think about it on a daily basis, but it's also it's an intense, ongoing, iterative process. In other words, it shifts and changes as you go along. You got to think about is what I'm focusing on right now really going to help me get to my result? It's thinking about things two years, 3 years, 5 years down the road. It's thinking about things in perspective of how that matches with everything else. And so you've got to be exploring and think about, is my direction, is my focus really placed in the right area? Am I really going to do the right thing? And, you know, one of the great examples that Greg McKeon talks about in the book, and I love this, is that if you woke up in the morning and you only had your eyes focused one time that day, most of the day you would be out of focus. Your eyes would not see things. So, like, if you put on a pair of glasses, for example, and you only could see things one way and your eyes never focused at all, you would be blind most of the day. You know, you wouldn't be able to see anything. And I think that's a really good example because of helping you see how focus is both a noun and a verb, but it's constantly shifting and changing. When I look at something close up, for example, my eyes have to focus to see that. And if I look at something far away, my eyes have to focus again to see that. So it's an intense skill to look at something and say, okay, I'm looking at something far away, I'm looking at something close up. I'm going to think about that in the context of what I'm doing every day. And so the thing that's important, I think, to realize about focus, if you're going to get something done as an entrepreneur, it requires that you focus on something singularly for a period of time. Because if you don't, you're not going to get anything done. And a lot of times entrepreneurs have that skill. Maybe they have other members on their team that maybe don't have that same focus. And that's really the times where you can veer off where you're supposed to be. And so I guess probably the best way to describe this is if you're trying to focus on something to get things done, the only way you're going to really build momentum and build a big business or build a business that's going to be sustainable over time is that it requires that focus as both a noun and a verb. But really, to focus on a singular objective first, so this is what I'm going to get done, and then work on that throughout the day. Because it's very difficult to build momentum if you're constantly jumping from shiny object to shiny object to shiny object. You want to put your energy and your heart and your soul into something for a sustained period of time and grow that, and then periodically, maybe every quarter or every 6 months or every year, step back for a little bit and say, okay, am I really going in the right direction? Is this really what the market wants? Is this really where I'm going that's going to help me get what you want? And so kind of to summarize what we just talked about here is that both are important. You've got to focus on things with a singular goal, but you've also got to think about it in the context is I don't want to become Kodak. I don't want to create a product that's obsolete, you know, 20, 30 years down the road because that's all I think about. And just remember, you can't build momentum if you don't focus on something. You've got to adapt and be focused on and recognize your own weaknesses for why you're getting distracted in the first place so you can get things done. So, again, it's a skill, and it's both a noun and a verb. And if you focus on things with that focus, that kind of single-minded approach, you're going to get a lot more done, build momentum, and then make sure you step back occasionally to look at the big picture as well.
Very well put, yes. You say in your book distractions are literally everywhere and that most people allow more than they need, which, of course, causes them to lose big-time productivity. So give us some tips on how our listeners can avoid both internal and external distractions. You've already given us some, but any additional ones?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think the core element here of this is you've got to value your time and treat it as valuable. Just like the example you just gave a minute ago, someone calls you up on the phone and says, hey, I want to talk to you right now. You know what your schedule is that day. You've set your priorities about what's important to you that day. And you can say, look, I've got these two available times. This is when I can do it. And if you just let someone call you up and say, okay, I'm going to handle this as the day goes along, you let other people determine your priorities instead of yourself. And so it's the same thing. If you let distractions and disruptions prevent you from what you're doing, you really don't have a clear sense of purpose. You really don't have clear priorities about what you're trying to do. And so there's two main areas, as you mentioned, between what kind of distractions there are. There's external distractions. And there's internal distractions. I want to talk about both of those a little bit because they're different, and especially how you approach them. So external distractions, and this is an exercise I would recommend that you do, is to make a list of all the external distractions you see. So maybe keep a pad of paper, and throughout the day, look at what's distracting you. So maybe it's someone coming into your office, or maybe it's your phone ringing, or maybe it's your cell phone buzzing and beeping, and you're getting distracted constantly with text messages or whatever it is. But it's so easy with our connected world today to let electronic devices that beep and alert you to get completely lost in that, and it's very difficult to get focused. So like when I write, for example, or when I try to get focused on a project I'm working on, I'll turn off my digital devices, or I'll go someplace where I can't be interrupted, where I sound, and then I leave my cell phone in my car. And so when I'm there, no one knows where I'm at, so I have like a secluded place I can go to that no one knows where I'm at, so I can't be distracted. It seems like a simple concept, but you can't be interrupted if people can't find you. And then it's the same thing too. If your phone is turned off in your car, you can go focus on something for 90 minutes or for a few hours and really get a lot done. It's amazing how much you get done when you're not distracted. So that'd be an exercise to figure out what's distracting you right now, and then how can you engineer your environment to prevent those distractions from happening for yourself? Because if you don't determine what those are first and then figure out a way to overcome those, you're going to get sucked into a fog of activities that seem productive, but aren't really going to help you get what you want. So a good example of this would be Facebook. It's easy to get sucked into Facebook thinking you're doing a lot of things that are helping you build your business. But a lot of times you're getting sucked in that and you say, oh, that's a cute little cat video, or oh, my friend's doing this or that or whatever it is. So you may go there with the intention of doing Facebook ads or building your business or something like that. But what happens is you get sucked into other things because there's no real controls on what's in your feed and what's really happening. So that's a good example of that. So the second area is your internal distractions. And this is, I would couch this into two categories, a drama and emotion. And this is what other people say and do, and then what you think about yourself. And so this is most often happening in your own life because of your own doubts and beliefs. So you might say to yourself, well, I'm not, like let's say you set a goal to write a book. And you say, well, I don't know anything, or I've never written a book before, or I see these other people have written books, and they seem much smarter or more capable than me. Excuse me. So you start playing these scenarios in your mind, and you never really actually sit down and write the book because you're distracted by your own internal self-talk that says you're not an author, you've never done this before. Instead of sitting down and saying, I'm going to write one page today, and I'm not going to get up until I've written these three concepts down that I teach my clients. And then so that's how you start your book, for example. But you've got to focus on one task at a time. That's why focus is, again, so important. In a world of mass distraction where everything's going on around you, you can't focus simultaneously on all these different things. Your mind is very, very powerful. And if you direct it to one thing, one task, instead of six activities at the same time, thinking you're being more productive, if you just put one task, okay, in the next 90 minutes, I'm going to do this, and you focus on that, you're going to be so much more successful. One of the biggest problems internally that we have as entrepreneurs is that we have way, 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 way too much to do. And so we have this overwhelm button in our lives that is constantly flashing or going off. It's like, and at some point you just say, forget this, I'm going to go do something else. And you stop or you procrastinate what you should be doing because you're seeking relief from this overwhelm by doing tension relieving activities instead of focusing on goal achieving activities going to help you get what you want. And I think this is really important. If you're struggling with procrastination, you're struggling with self-doubt, again, write down, here's the one task that I'm going to get done. Here's the one thing that's going to help me build my business. And then focus on that for 90 minutes. And you'll be amazed at how much more you'll get done. And at the end, you can pat yourself on the back and say, yeah, I did a great job. I got that done. And you feel so much more productive. You feel so much happier. And you're able to achieve so much more if you consistently do that day in and day out. And so my recommendation to you is that if you want to achieve more in your life, you've got to learn to silence internal and external distractions because they're everywhere. And the most productive people in our society, the most focused, and really the people who are the most highly paid, have that skill to focus on what it is that they need to do. And, like, for example, if you're going in to have a brain surgeon operate on you, you wouldn't want him texting in between him doing something on you. You want him focusing on the surgery he's doing right then. That's why he's paid a very high amount. Because he's highly skilled in that specific thing. He's focusing on that area. But even the most skilled surgeon is not going to be really good if he has 20 people talking to him and he's got a cell phone and he's trying to watch a TV show all at the same time. And you can see that analogy, but it's amazing how much we allow ourselves to get distracted by trying to do all those things at the same time. And that's never going to allow you to really get done what you want to get done. So I hope that kind of answered your question on what those, how those two break down, the internal and external distractions.
That was absolutely fantastic, and I totally agree about, you know, cutting off the phone and don't check your email, and for goodness sakes, don't get on Facebook when you're trying to do something important. And both of us are writers, you and I, and I know how seductive as a tension reliever, well, I'm just going to hop on Facebook and put a nice quote on there. And, you know, to build my, you know, reputation in business. And then suddenly you're reading somebody else's, you know, drama, you know, and, you know, it's just so important that we honor ourselves first. So thank you for that well said information. You also talk about a lot in your book, which I really appreciate, that being productive is about being in control of yourself, your environment, and others, and what you choose to work on. So what are some of the best ways you found to get and stay focused on your, and this is the important part of the question, the highest value task or the biggest money-making task?
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, you've got to, you know what those things are. You know what things ring the cash register. You know the things that are making money for you in your business. And so being productive is knowing what those skills are, knowing that's what you're paid for, and then choosing to focus on those things and not be distracted by anything else. And so you can hire other people to do things that may distract you away from that. But and a lot of entrepreneurs do that. You know, they will, they can't be distracted by lesser things because they can only be focused on those high value things. So one a good example, you know, like you said, we're both writers. One, you know, David McCullough and Dan Brown are both very high prolific writers. And one of the things that they've done, I've studied their lives, and one of the things they do about how they write is they work in a secluded environment. Like David McCullough actually has a little house behind his house that he goes to that has no internet connectivity. It has a computer on there, so he can't actually connect to the internet. He can only go in there and focus and write. Dan Brown does the same kind of thing. He has a place in his basement. He goes into it's a locked room that no one can come into or distract him or bother him. There's no way that he can access. There's no phones. There's no venting. So when he goes into that room, he knows psychologically, I'm going to write for the next, you know, how many ever hours. And I think that all of us kind of need to have a place like that, or in our, even if it's just in our mind, that we're going into that that secluded room, that there's no barriers, that there's no nothing that can break through that barrier that we're setting up around ourselves. And some of us, you know, we go into an open room, and we sit down, and everybody can come in there and talk to us, and we wonder why we can't get anything done. But if you go into a closed room, or like I mentioned, I sometimes have to go someplace where I can't be found if I want to get something done. It's a high-value thing. I know I can get it done really quickly if I just focus in that way. You've got to make sure that there's, you know, internet is a very big distraction for people. So engineer your environment for success. That's probably the best way to do that. Figure out what your productivity kryptonite is. What is it that, just like Superman, what is the thing that if you put that in the room with you, that you're suddenly weak, you suddenly no longer have the ability to focus. And if you can figure out what that is, then put that in a lead box like Superman did with kryptonite, and it can't get through, and it can't affect you, it can't bother you. And so really what I'm going to just share some ideas and some strategies here for you in the next little bit, but I think it's really important that you put constraints on yourself and others. If you want to get more done, like I said, focus is a skill. So, for example, let's say that you recognize right now that you get online on Facebook way too much and you're not as productive as you could be, or you're spending way too much time in email. So by putting a constraint on yourself would be, I'm not going to get more online more than half an hour. So there are tools out there that you can download for your computer that actually log how much time that you spend doing different activities. And they have apps for this as well. But you can go on there and it actually logs in how much time you spend in each activity. It's a really interesting exercise to go through and do that, to say, hey, I'm spending this much time on Facebook, or I'm spending this much time on my email program, whereas where I really want to be spending my time is here, you know, whatever it is. Maybe it's editing or whatever your particular skill is that you do for your business. And so, you know, you can even install software that blocks you from getting on social media, that maybe has one or two passwords that you have to look up, so it kind of breaks you out of that loop that just it's so easy just to get on and check something. And if you have to reconnect it and you have a special password, you have to get in it. Mind you, oh, yeah, I'm not finished with my project yet. I can't reward myself with this until this is done. So you can do that exercise. So I'll just, I'll give you an example, putting constraint on yourself. Now, putting constraint on others would be, let's say you're in an office environment and you have people all the time that come in and interrupt you. And so I was visiting with a client a couple of years ago, and she told me that she never could get anything done because she would constantly be interrupted by members on her team that would come in and ask her questions all the time. A lot of the questions were the ones that they could answer themselves, but they just wanted to make sure that they were doing it right so they couldn't get in trouble later. So what she did was that she, I told her, well, I can fix that problem way quick. Let's put a sign on your door that says, you know, this person is available from 1 till 2 o'clock in the afternoon to answer your questions. If you have something else, just put it in this box and then, or, and then I'll respond back to it. You know, if it's just a yes, no question, put this and then put yes or no and then answer it. And then she has a little box outside of her office. And so she had it, and I said, then what you do is if anybody opens the door that it's not that time, they have to buy you lunch the next day. And she said, immediately, that problem went away. No one wanted to come and interrupt her because they wanted to buy lunch for her. So there's a consequence for interrupting her. So all of a sudden, she had this huge amount of productivity because she wasn't distracted, wasn't interrupted anymore. And that's a great example of putting constraints on somebody else that works with you in your environment so you can focus and not get interrupted by them. But it really comes back to this idea of
I was going to say, let me tell you, we're definitely putting that idea into motion at our office. Thank you. The lunch thing, yes. Good job.
Yeah, well, I think it seems like it's such a simple idea, but it's amazing how choosing to say, hey, this is how, or putting a system, you know, in place. That's why systems are really valuable, too, because you can say, okay, here, if you have a question about this, it's probably in the system's book, and if it's not, then maybe we should add that in there so that if there's a new person on the team that doesn't know the answer to that, they can go have a place they can reference that or have someone on the team that can reference that or have a meeting once a day. A great idea I learned about this is the 7-minute meeting that Cameron Harold talks about in his book, Double Double. And basically what they would do is they'd have a 7-minute meeting, but they could only stand up when they had the meeting. They wouldn't allow themselves to sit down. So the first thing they do every day is they come in and they have a 7-minute meeting, and there are 6 areas of priority that they were focusing on their business. And each person in the group would have 1 minute to talk about what they were doing in that particular area of their business to grow their revenues. And at the end of that 6 minutes, or end of that 6 minutes where they have six priorities, so there's 1 minute for each priority. At the end of that 6 minutes, they'd have 1 minute where the CEO could summarize, okay, here's what we're going to do today. Great job. Let's go. And they have a little cheer that they would say at the very end, and then boom, everybody would sit and cheer, and then they would all go to their specific areas of responsibility. But he said it was amazing how productive that meeting was because they couldn't sit down. They couldn't get distracted by food or just talking about whatever because they knew that they only had 1 minute for each area of priority they could talk about, and then they had to get on to the next thing. And so that's another example of putting constraint on your team. If you have a lot of meetings and you feel like, man, I never get anything done in my meetings, that's a great example of a way to shorten that down, be productive, be focused, and it's amazing how much more you can get done if you engineer your environment. Like they said, we can't sit down, we have to stand up, you only have 1 minute, you have a little stopwatch clock, okay, go, boom, okay, that's everybody, you say what you need to say. And it also makes you more prepared. So you come to the meeting and say, okay, if you look at this memo I prepared, it goes into a lot more detail about what I'm working on, but here's the 3 points I wanted to highlight in this meeting today that I'm going to be putting together, working on, or doing, and letting everybody be aware of. And that's an example. So you have much more prepared for that meeting as a result of doing that. So I guess that's probably the best way to summarize that. If you want to get more done and be more productive, you've got to learn how to control yourself, and you've got to learn how to control others. And that might sound kind of a little bit it's just about being productive. It's about choosing your priorities over someone else's priorities. If I come to work every day and say, hey, I'm just going to let whatever happen to me today, I'm probably not going to get very much done because I'm going to get on all these emails, or I get on the Facebook and I get sucked into someone else's drama, and then I'm not going to be able to focus and get the things that I want to get done. They're going to help me achieve my goals. So one of the best ideas that I could teach you is this idea of blocking off things. And so I talk about this briefly in the Focus book, but in my book, The System is a Secret, in Chapter 16, I have a whole lot of information about productivity strategies and systems you can set up about that. But the thing that's probably been the most helpful for me to get things done is to break my day into blocks of time, the 90-minute blocks of time. And then so here's the assignment I would give to you, is to write down all the recurring activities that you do, that only you can do, that you're the best at doing. So maybe that's, for example, then block off the days of the week. So get a little calendar and have 6 days or 5 days, however many days you work a week, and then block it off and say, okay, on Mondays, I'm going to work on marketing. I'm going to plan training meetings I'm going to do for my staff later on. On Tuesday, I'm going to work on meeting with my team members on performance, for example, or whatever it is. Then maybe block three is your time where you have to eat lunch, return emails, or do phone calls. So I try to block all that together at the same time. So only open up your email program a couple times a day. Maybe block four is a specific marketing project that's designed to get more business for you. And you do that on Thursdays, as an example, during this specific block of time. And then block five might be you do systems work. You work, and then there's going to be a time where you have blocked off where you pay bills or you develop a new product line. On every Friday, for example, from between 8:30 and 10 o'clock, you work on a new product line. So the point is you may take that consistent time to work on those key priorities in focused blocks of time. And there's a reason why 90-minute blocks of time are the best time to do it, because your body works in rhythm. And I talk about this in the book a little bit about how there's two different kinds of rhythms that your body goes through. And so we work in 90-minute cycles, our bodies do. And so if you can take a break after that 90-minute cycle and refresh yourself, just take a couple-minute break or five-minute break, whatever it is, and you go sit back down, and then you go into another 90-minute cycle, it's amazing how much more productive you'll be than if you just sit through and just try to power your way through the day with no breaks, because your brain gets distracted and it gets overwhelmed by all those kinds of things you're doing. So, again, going back to what I was saying is look at your schedule and make a list of all the things you do that create revenue for your business, because those are the things that are probably the most important things for you to be working on, and then divide those into categories. And then take your day and write out five blocks of time that you're going to work on something. So, like, block one might be from 8 to 9:30. Block two might be from 10 to 11:30. So there's time broken out here for breaks, for example. Block three might be from 11:30 to 1. And that would be like the lunch. I'm going to turn all my phone calls between 11:30 and 1. I'm going to do all my emails between 11:30 and 1, or whatever that would be. And I'm going to eat lunch during that time. So that's my 90-minute block to get all that stuff done. Then maybe block four is from 1 to 2:30, where I'm going to be focused again on some projects that are going to help me get more revenue for my business. Or block five might be from 3 to 4:30. So you can decide when you want those blocks to be, but then after you have those blocks written down, then take those little things and write those down in different areas. So one suggestion, I've done this with a lot of clients that I've worked with, where I've had them take those activities and they put a little whiteboard up and they have those activities written on little index cards that are different colors. So they color code their way. So for example, marketing would be green, because that's bringing in money for your business, for example. So you take the green cards and you put all the related activities that you do in your business, and then you have your calendar on those blocks of time. So I'm going to work on marketing in this time here on Tuesdays from 8 to 9:30. Like for me, I do my marketing on Monday. So I have a Monday morning marketing meeting. So with myself, where I'm thinking about marketing for my business. And so that would be a green card to put in that spot. And I'm a visual learner, so that's an example of how I put that together. But you put that in there, and then maybe you have another category of reading or improving yourself. And so you make on that card, you can write all the books that you want to read that month, or the audio programs you want to listen to, or the podcast you want to listen to. And then you can put that in that little block of time that you, like when you're out walking or your first day of the day when you get up, that you're going to listen to that to invigorate your mind and think about what it is you want to do to help you stay on task or your focus or whatever it is. But the key idea here between that, you can use your own system for how you do that. But the key thing is to break your work down in 90-minute blocks of time, prioritize what you do that's going to make you revenue, and then focus on those activities, on only that activity for that time. Now, one of the things I learned from Dan Kennedy, which is such a brilliant idea, and it seems so simple, but when you want to do something, you have to have a start time and you have to have an end time. And most people have a start time, but they never have an end time. And so as a result, they'll just go on and on and on and on, and anything ever gets done. But he said, and this was really quick for me, he said, if I'm in a race with my horses, for example, and if I only have a start time and I have no end time, I don't make any money if I keep running around the track for the next 3 days, you know? I mean, I have to cross the line first if I want to win. And that's such a great idea that if you really want to get more done, make sure you have a start time and end time, and then break it off into those blocks. Then you can set your calendar, or there's little clocks you can get for your computer, like timeref.info, for example. You can download a clock and put it on your computer, or you can even do it on your cell phone. I typically don't like to do my cell phone because that's easy to get distracted. Like, you get like a kitchen timer down at the grocery store that you can just put for 15 minutes or 30 minutes or 90 minutes, And then when that thing rings, bing, it's your stop time. You have to stop and then continue on what you're going to do. So those are just a few ideas of how to be more productive and focused and get more done in your day.
Excellent ideas. And in Jim's book on page 29, he gives really great charts on how to schedule your day, all kinds of stuff about, where you're putting your focus, your activities, how much time you're spending on these each week. So he's given you some really good charts. So, again, you need to really invest in this book. And actually, Jim, we could spend the whole hour doing this, but since we've already talked about we're going to talk about another book, let's go ahead and talk about the Leverage book, how to accelerate the speed of your results. Now, in this book, which is also a fabulous book, folks, and I believe with their 99 cents, is that correct?
Yeah, 99 cents on Kindle, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. So you got to buy this. In fact, you should buy both of these books for every person who works for you is really the truth, and everybody that you know that you work with. But you talk about focusing on helping people and business owners understand how to leverage their assets for maximum benefit. So explain briefly what you mean by leverage and how it should and could be used to help people accomplish more.
Well, there's basically the idea of leverage is you're getting more done with less. And so we just spent a lot of time talking about time, about how time is a tool, and you can leverage that time. So, for example, if I'm going to do a webinar, for example, I can spend 1 hour and connect with hundreds of thousands of people online, or even like this call here, it's a leverage for me to communicate a message with, hundreds of thousands of people. And so it's the same idea that if you have a podcast, you take 1 hour of time and invest in teaching people something, and then it comes back to you multiple fold. So basically leverage is you think about, how can I get more done with less? And people who are wealthy understand this concept, and they've learned how to leverage their time. They've learned how to leverage a business where they maybe have multiple streams of income or whatever it is. But you've got to think about what it is you're trying to achieve. So some of the ideas that really helped me formulate this was from Robert Kiyosaki's book, Retire Young, Retire Rich. He has a whole section in his book about leverage. And that was really kind of an eye-opening experience for me to read that and think about that, because he said, this is something he said in the book that I never really forgotten, and I just encourage you to think about this statement. He says, people who only work hard have limited leverage. If you're working hard physically and not getting ahead financially, then you're probably someone else's leverage. And I've thought about that statement a lot of times. Am I the leverage or am I someone else's? Because as an entrepreneur, you are going to get a lot more done if you are the one that's the leverage. If you're not someone else's leverage, but you're creating your own leverage. And so there's a lot of examples of leverage, and I talk about a few in this book, like fishing. You go out and go fishing with your bare hands. You go out and go fishing with a fishing pole. You go out fishing pole with a net. You could throw a stick of dynamite into the pond or something like that. All those would be examples of leverage. I mean, you'll probably get in trouble for throwing a dynamite in the pond, but I mean, it's the idea is you can get a lot more done with a different area of focus. And so those are, if like relationships. Like let's say, for example, Lee knows somebody that I don't know very well, but I have a good relationship with Lee. I can leverage her relationship with someone else as long as it's a good, healthy relationship to help that person get something and then have them help me as well. So, and we've spent a lot of time talking about time, but the real key principle here is that if you look at leverage as an asset, and you look at what you do in your life as an asset, that it's designed to produce more for you. So an asset is something that you put something in and more comes out. And a leverage is a good example of that. A liability is something you put something in and it takes something out of you, whether it takes time, energy, money, whatever it is. So what you want to think about is, what are my assets? What are the things that only I can do? And how can I leverage those across more mediums to be able to get my message out? So like if you're a speaker, an author, or a trainer, you might have a podcast, you might have a book. Those are all tools that can help you expand your leverage. So the real power of leverage is in your mind. I think we'll probably talk about this a little bit here, but I hope that kind of helps you understand the concept of leverage. Just think about if you want more, and that's kind of why I subtitled the book, how to accelerate the speed and velocity of your results. You'll get a lot more done a lot faster if you focus on the right things. You focus on building leverage in the right areas of your business. And so I hope that kind of helps kind of give a brief summary of that concept, and I go into a lot more detail about it, obviously, in the book.
Absolutely. You also describe 11 assets that people have that they should be leveraging better in their lives. I know we can't go through all 11, but give us an example of one that you think that most people actually don't focus on enough.
Well, I'm probably beating a dead horse with this, but I talk about processes and systems a lot because that is something that people don't really work on or do something about until it's painful, until they lose money or until they lose a client or until they have something that happens that causes us to reevaluate what they were doing. And so really what leverage in this context is about is to say, hey, what business, for example, I give this example in the book, what business has more power, a business that has no processes and systems or a business that has well-thought-out processes and systems that anybody in the business can run without you having to be there all the time? And the obvious answer to that question is the second one. But what you want to think about is how could you leverage that asset? So if you take time to think about the systems in your life and the systems in your business and say, how can I be more productive, you know, and get more things done? It'll be much more successful if you think about that in the context of the overall work of your day. And so, you know, another example might be your connections. Who do you know that knows other people that could help you expand your business? And so, you know, if you think about it, for example, which business has more power? A business that introduces clients who buy from them to the top individuals in their niche because you also know those people and it also strengthens that relationship you have with somebody else, or somebody that knows those people but doesn't take the time to introduce those people to their clients. So that's just an example. Every business has clients. Every business knows people. Every business owner knows people. So think about how can you connect these people and make an event or create something that's going to allow people to be exposed to other ideas or be exposed to information that's going to help them grow their business. And that's going to help you be more valuable to that client so they don't ever want to have you not be their client because of what you brought to them. And so I think that's really important. So thinking about that, I think most people don't take enough time to think to assess their life or, like you talk about, Lee, have an idea day where you can sit down and say, okay, what are the most important areas of my life? And like I talk about in the book, there's 11 basic areas of leverage that you can have, whether that's your own client, your own brand, your time, as we've talked about a lot here today, but then take time to think through those and ask yourself some of the questions I pose in the book to help you really break this down. Think about that idea to the point where you can get things done and make more happen for yourself and for your business.
Yes, your book is – one of the things I really like about your book is that it's super short, but it's all meat. You know, there's no fillers here. Okay, let's talk about a few ways that you can stand out in a crowded marketplace and leverage that difference to be a lot more competitive. Because, you know, this is a challenge for a lot of business owners. They get kind of stuck in their own mindset of this is who I am and this is what we do. So let's talk about that for leverage.
Yeah, I think, again, think about, first off, for your example of clients, is what if clients already bought from you, and what do clients buy that they don't currently buy from you? And kind of think about that for a minute and say, is there something else I could offer that would help people that's around my area of expertise that would be helpful for people to do that? So leveraging the idea. One of the ideas I talk about in the book, which I think is a really brilliant idea, was about a jeweler that had this $30,000 piece of jewelry, or actually 26,000 pounds, so about $50,000, $60,000 necklace. And most people could never afford to buy that necklace. So what this group of women did was there's 13 women who each put in $1,200 to buy this necklace, or 1,200 pounds, I guess, because this was originally reported in a British newspaper. But what's interesting about that idea is that what they do is these 13 women, they each get to wear the necklace for a month. So they package it up and ship it around to each person. So they each get to have the benefit of wearing it over that month. And they get to enjoy that. And so they can afford $1,200. They can have this absolutely gorgeous necklace they can wear around to parties they can put on and kind of a list of what they want to do. But it's a great example of a business who instead of saying, we're going to sell only $50,000 or $60,000 items, says, let's get together a group of 10 people, for example, who can all share this expertise and this wisdom. And then it's not quite as expensive to have access to me as the expert. So I think that's a good example of a coaching group. That's something you're doing like that. There's multiple people involved that can leverage that so you're not spending all that money on just one person. Obviously, you can do that too if you want to get more focused and specialized help. But I think that's probably a good example of that, is just thinking about what is, how can you break what you do down into an element that allows you to think about that. Another good example of this would be like with Disney. They're always thinking about, how can I maximize the number of dollars from each guest that comes into the park, that comes out of their pocket, you know? So when they walk in, you spend money, obviously, for the ticket to get in, and then as you walk through the gates, there are all these shops and different things like that. And they study patterns of how people move in the park to think about, what if we put this here? What if we did this here? Would it help us maximize the revenue we'd have in those areas? And so that's a good example of that, testing things, looking at things, and examining your business in different ways to think about, what's something I could do that would change the game for me? And if you're an internet marketer listening to this, is there something to do on your upsell after they buy something or whatever that allows you to change the game really about what it is you're doing? So I hope that kind of answers your question on that. It's just kind of thinking about things in a little bit different context to say what's important, what's going to help us get the best result we want.
Well, I love that story when I was reading in the book about the jewelry, because, you know, everybody knows I'm a jewelry person, and I thought, wow, that would have saved me a lot of money over the years. I actually knew two women who bought one wedding gown who were exactly the same size. The first one who got to wear it was very happy. The second one was terrified it was going to be ruined by the time she got it. But I love this out-of-the-box, out of the ordinary thinking, and that's what we as entrepreneurs and business owners need to be doing all the time. So great, great food for thought there for people. One of the things you say in your book is that little hinges open big doors. I've heard Dan Kennedy and Bill Glazer say that also. So in what specific ways do you believe leverage helps entrepreneurs go to the next level in their business?
Well, it's the same principle, you know. It's like a lever can move, placed with the right fulcrum, can move a massive rock that's even bigger than you are as a person. And it's the same thing for your business. If you want to grow your business to the next level, you can look for relationships. You can look for maybe a new vertical market or something that you think that you haven't really thought about before that can help you get more done. So it's really kind of looking at that same thing and saying, what are the little things that are going to make the biggest difference? And thinking about that in that context. So, you know, I think a good example of this would be to look at what you're selling in your business and how you can, just like raising prices, for example, and say, how can I raise the value of what it is I'm offering to people so that there's more money? So let's say you have a product and let's say you sell 1,000 of a product in a year. If you raise the price by $100 for each one, that's $100,000 more gross profit a year. If you have 500 products, you increase that by $100, that's a $50,000 more gross profit. Or if you have a $100 increase and you only sell 200 products per year, that's $20,000 more gross profit. So when you think about that, what could you do with an extra $100,000 of gross profit in your business if you sold 1,000 items in a year? But then you can ask yourself the question, how could I add more value to be able to make that more meaningful to people, so they are excited to spend that money with me because of what they're getting out of it? I think that's a good way to look at that. Another way is look at your phone and how your phone is answered. If someone calls and asks a question, are you turning people away because you don't train your staff how to answer the phone correctly? You know, when people walk into your business, whether that's online on your website or calling you or whatever it is, what's the first exposure they have to your business and your online presence and your what they experience when they call you up on the phone or whatever? Is that's really what people are seeing or thinking about, is, you know, is do I really want to do business with this person based on what's happened the first 30 seconds to a minute? Another area is, what do they experience when they come into your business for the first time, when they meet with you for the first time? Is there something you can do that would make that difference? So I've been in the retail world a long time, and one of the things that we found is if we could schedule appointments and have people come to that appointment and then have a free gift for them when they had arrived at that appointment it was personalized to them, that it set the appointment off so differently, and they didn't have to spend a lot of money to do that, but we made a little box that had a gift inside of it, and it had their name personalized on the top of the box. And when they came into the appointment, we said, hey, we want to just give you a gift for showing up at your appointment today so we could actually help you out to find what you're looking for. And it completely changed the conversation. All of a sudden, they're like, no other place I went to and I'm looking for this product is offering me a gift, I like these people. And there's that reciprocation that's immediately happening with that. And so one little shift like that, it makes the whole sales conversation flow much smoother, and they're more likely to buy because of what you try to treat them at the very beginning. And another example is knowing what you're going to do next. One of the things I talk about a lot with my systems, and the system is a secret book, is what happens next, WHN, or what's going to happen, what's the next step in the process? And think about that through its completion, and then reverse engineer it and think, what can I do to add surprise? What can I do to add more interest or intrigue into the process so it makes people want to experience what it's like to do business with me? For example, another way, what's going to attract people to come into my marketing funnel? What bait or what attractive element is going to say, hey, I want that. I'm going to go ahead and give you my email address, or I want help with that specific area, so you're going to give that to them. So an example of that is a newsletter, like having some kind of a way to be able to have people communicate or connect with you is a good example of how to do that too. But I think that the key thing you got to think about here is when you look at your business, if you're looking at how people come into your business, how people go out of your business, if you want to have more leverage, think about how can you enhance things so that that little hinge that opens the door can open that door a short distance, or it can make, open it all the way up. And what you want in your business is more opportunities to open it all the way so you can grow your business, scale it up, and have more success as a result. And that's where the concept of leverage is all about.
Well, I love that. I want to share with you a story that I just experienced yesterday. I have a cat and a dog, and if you have pets, they have problems occasionally. You have to take them to the vet. And so I'm getting a $1,200 bill for, this vet bill, and they leverage the bill in a way I have never, ever seen it done before. So instead of just getting a piece of paper with the $1,200 bill on it, which is painful, they actually gave me a gift bag that had, the pretty paper in it, and there was a water bottle, and there were some treats for the cat, and then there was all the, medications in there, and then, just all this little stuff, and the invoice was in the bag, and so they handed it to me like I had gotten a gift. Now, being a marketer, I was delighted because I thought, what a clever way to change the perception of that, ultimately that $1,200 bill. So I just wanted to share that because as you were talking about, doing things different, leveraging it, changing their perception, this popped in my mind. I'd also like to remind people with that vein of thought that, everything that Jim is talking about leveraging, that you should always have a keen eye with everybody that you do business with, anything that they do unusual, ask yourself, how could I leverage this idea? How could I use it in my business? And that just because maybe the dry cleaner used it and you're not a dry cleaner, doesn't mean, you're in the tax business that you can't figure out a way to use something like that. Anyway, Jim, we could go on forever. I just recommend everybody please go to Amazon and go get the book, Leverage, How to Accelerate the Speed and Velocity of Your Results, and the focus book, The Key Skill to Igniting Your Productivity. Again, they're 99 cents each. I recommend that you not only get them for yourselves, but every person in your staff. Jim, tell everybody how they can find you.
Yeah, you can go to my website, soundlawsofsuccess.com, and you can send a message to me that way if you want to. My email is jamescarlbutler@gmail.com. You can send me a message there if you want to, and I'll respond back to you when I'm able to do that in my focused productive time. But, I really enjoyed having a chance to share these ideas with you. I hope you'll take them and go use them and be probably more exceptional in your life as a result of learning how to leverage your skills to get more done.
Absolutely, and we thank you tremendously for your brilliance, because this really is brilliance. And folks, we're going to share a few little excerpts in our reports about this, but again, there's no excuse not to get a 99-cent book, that is for sure. And my last thought I'd like to remind everybody is, with everything that Jim was sharing today, you must walk your talk here. It's very, very important that your staff, your family, the people around you see you controlling your time, see you, working on what is important, because then they have the role model in front of them, and I think this is a crucial thing for all of us in our life. So, Jim, thank you very, very much, everybody. We're going to call it a wrap. We'll talk to you next month, and have a fantastic month.